Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello. Welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
We're two friends with a shared love of food, cooking, and all things cookbooks.
We are now in the third season of this podcast. Ooh. And this one is all about, well, not really anything in particular. We are themeless. So you can expect deep dives on certain dishes, reviews of cookbooks, of course, but there'll be new cookbooks, old cookbooks, all sorts of cookbooks. And of course, we'll be asking you, our lovely listeners, for some input on episodes that we're going to do.
It's going to be so
fun.
And if you love what we do, we're also on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help to cover the podcast's costs, from the books themselves to the ingredients for what we cook. And in return, you'll get some fun stuff like bonus minisodes. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now, let's get to the fun part.
No, you're going to call me the wrong name then. Hi, Hannah.
I would never forget your name.
Oh, thank you.
How are you doing?
I appreciate that. I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. It feels like a long time since we've recorded an episode.
It has been.
Do you even remember how to do this? Because I don't.
No. No, this is our second attempt at it as well.
Yeah.
For this episode. We've both had long weeks. You, though, in the meantime, since we last recorded, have been to Glastonbury. Have you spiritually changed?
No, emotionally broken, spiritually intact. Physically and emotionally broken. It was wonderful, but these things get harder as you get older, man. It was a lot. It was very hot, and I'm banned from talking about the fact that I was working during Glastonbury, so it wasn't an entire jolly, but it was really fun. Sir Elton John, you know,
he was amazing.
Yeah, he was great. But
watched it from home.
Lizzo was the highlight, man. She's so good.
Nice.
She's just a joy.
She is a joy. She also, I don't know if you follow her on various social media, she was like staying in Bath, right?
Oh,
which is like 10
she?
Minutes down the road from where I live in Bristol. And she was just posting about her like breakfast at this fancy hotel in Bath. And I was like, I love that. I love her.
Yeah, there's nothing cuter than like someone who's really, really, really appreciative to be there. And she talked during the set about how she played like John Peel tent like years before and not many people came. And then she was at like the other stage and now she's like worked her way up to the main pyramid stage.
So cool.
Oh, she's just fantastic. I love her very
also,
much.
Also back on food and Lizzo. Just mm-hmm. Did you see that? You've follow her, but she went from here, like the southwest where Glastonbury is,
yeah,
to Ireland. And I can't remember whether she was in Belfast or whether she was in Dublin, so please forgive me, but she was looking for a Munchies box or what do you call them? Like lots of, like from the fish and chip shop.
I don't know.
Irish people.
I don't know. Like a snack box? But that's chicken.
Yeah, no.
Is there such a thing as a Munchies box? Maybe I have. I've missed this in there.
No, we've talked about it before.
Spice bag.
A spice bag. Oh. Yeah. She went to get a spice. Is that a Northern Irish thing?
Or no, Irish I think thing? It's an Irish thing.
She said she went to this place in possibly Dublin where she was. And yeah. Everyone had recommended it to her, but it was closed the one day, whether she got there on the Sunday or something. So she had to go on the net. And she was a bit unimpressed by the spice bag, but the fact that she was like on a mission for the spice bag, I loved it.
She's amazing. I still haven't had a spice bag because they're not, as far as I know, I could be wrong. They're not vegetarian. There's no vegetarian alternative in the mainstream. Not like
sorry, Lance.
A spice burger, which my ex-boyfriend thought was vegetarian and gave me when I was like 20, 21, and he was like, "You're pretty sure spice burgers are vegetarian," and then I was eating it and I was like, "This tastes very meaty."
And we googled it. They're not together. The doner kebab.
I walked out of that house and I never looked back. Anyway, we're not here to talk about spice.
A Munchies box, I believe, is from like the north of England.
Oh.
You're like, it's like a, an I array. Guess the same kind of principle. Yeah, like a beige buffet in a, yeah, I believe that's from like the north of England.
I'd love a beige buffet.
Me too.
It's hot in London and Bristol. It's very humid. My hair is very large.
And in charge.
Large and in charge. We've got a wedding next weekend and I'm very concerned about the hair situation.
A very outdoor wedding. We've been spending a lot of time outdoors together, actually.
Yeah, we have.
At this wedding,
But what is your, when it's hot, does your kitchen get hot? What's your thing that you cook in the heat?
Yeah, so my kitchen here in Bristol gets the like sun in the afternoon.
Same.
So it does get, it gets hot in the, right, your flat just gets the sun. Like you have,
direct.
Hannah has so many windows in her, like she's like basically,
I live in a greenhouse.
She lives in Kendall Roy's like Manhattan apartment but in London. It's just all windows.
I wish. I don't wish.
And I wish you lived. But anyway, no, it is just pure winters. It gets very hot, doesn't it?
Oh, like
we hosted some of our friends for a barbecue and we had the oven on all morning and it was a respite going out in the like 30 degree heat outside.
It's like the oven like keeps about 50% of its heat and pumps the other 50% of it out into the flat. Sam, it's just wonderful.
Really energy efficient. So it does get hot in my kitchen as well. Maybe not as hot as yours, but also I just don't, I feel like anytime I use the oven, it always has to be on for a certain amount, quite a long amount of time, which means that it just gets hot anyway.
Yeah.
So God bless the air fryer for one. But do you know what I'm on at the moment?
What are you on?
Anchovies.
Oh my God. Yes, please.
I've always loved anchovies. I've always loved them. But you know, when you get them fresh, like the chilled ones.
Yes.
And it's been like,
they're really like frantic. They're really stressed. I've got a big meeting.
The chaotic ones in a tin. I feel like I've just been putting like anchovies and blank on toast, like whatever I've got, right? Whether it's like tomatoes, which I will just roast up in the air fryer, or
You can roast tomatoes in the air fryer.
Yeah.
Do they go like quite roast, nice and dry? Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Like jammy and nice and love it. That's been my, I've been doing that quite a lot.
Nice.
Like with the, because I get tomatoes in my odd box, ding, 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 because it's tomato season. And I love, you know,
ding, ding, ding.
I may as well fill all of my tomato dreams up in the summer and just eat as much as I can.
My tomato dreams.
Here's my, you know, Here's my tomato dreams and anchovies dream toast thing I've got going on, right?
Right.
So in my freezer currently, I have a sliced up loaf of the Hearts Bakery, which is in Bristol.
Yeah.
The sesame sourdough.
Oh, yes.
And this particular loaf that I've got going on at the moment has such a good like sesame swirl. Like you can really like trace where it's been like folded in.
Oh,
like,
it's in the dough. It's not just on, yeah. on the crust. Oh my God.
No,
yes.
It's both. Yeah. So that's my base.
Okay.
With the tomatoes that have been roasted in the air fryer with salt, olive oil.
Nice.
Maybe a bit of like parsley from my herb garden.
Oh yeah. And Nigel Slater over here, eat your heart out.
I'm self-sufficient if you like parsley and mint. And then, yeah, like, I mean, any anchovies will do, but particularly those fresh ones because they taste more like vinegar than they do salt, right? And that's just, oh.
Delicious.
Love them. That's my summer lunch.
You can get them sometimes as like a tapa in Spain as well, can't you? Just like that.
Yeah.
And the olive oil is like almost green, like neon with, oh.
Yes.
Delicious. Ugh. The best thing ever.
Yeah. Love them. What's yours?
Yeah. Avoiding the oven at all costs.
Mm, yeah.
I've been doing like a lot of omelettes, but that's nothing new. Nice, yeah. I just like literally can hoof anything into an omelette and call it lunch. A lot of toast. Lot of like kind of like braising like courgettes and stuff in that beautiful Our Place pot that you got me, and then just kind of like thrown in some beans and like herbs, and then like serving it with some halloumi or something. That's just like my favorite like weeknight dinner. But this is not necessarily heat friendly, but I do have to talk, and I've talked to you about this already, but I have to tell our followers because they deserve to know that the Claire Saffitz feta stuffed flatbreads and aubergine dip, oh my God, I honestly think it's the best thing I've made in months. It's so delicious. Like the aubergine dip,
is this in dessert person?
It's in dessert person. And it is a bit involved. The aubergines are fine. Oh my God, the aubergines. You have to grill them, right? And so they get, the inside gets all pulpy. And I set off my fire alarm, of course. It's just like anytime you have the oven on like high temperature.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, obviously it's not great one for a hot day. But it's, the dip is not, it doesn't, I think if you think aubergine dip, it's easy to think like baba ganoush, but it doesn't taste like that. It's like you blitz it up in the food processor with like cumin and stuff. It's really nice and smooth and delicious. But the flatbreads are the like game changer. So you make this dough and then you roll it out and you, in like eight individual like balls, you roll out each ball and you like sprinkle feta on top, you twist, roll it up, make it into a swirl, and then you roll that out and then you cook the flatbreads on the pan. Holy mother of God, it was so delicious. I made it for me and Louise. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to look at the serving size or how many people that's meant to feed, because the two of us polished off the entire lot with some wine. And it was a game changer. So if anyone has that book, make that.
I bet you could probably find that. She has so many of her recipes on her YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
And I'm going to make them, I think.
Yeah.
I need to get better at flatbreads. I feel like that's you know, in my life.
Hers are yeasted, which they're not always, right? I feel like, you know.
No.
But they're worth it. And they have like yogurt and stuff in them, I think, if I remember rightly. But yeah, totally worth it. Delicious. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about, Victoria. Let's get down to business.
The oven features heavily in about what we're going to talk about, I think.
We should dedicate this episode to my dear friend Simon Wiltshire.
Yes, we should.
Who nominated this book, which is...
thrusted this book at you.
This is not the first thing he's thrust. I'm joking, it is. He thought that this book would be a really good one for us to cover because the theory is, and we'd love to hear, you know, if this is true, that loads of households have had this book over the years. And it was like probably like, you know, your mum, your grand's like,
yeah,
go to
it. Probably if you're in the UK or in England, at least. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Ireland, too.
Maybe. And well, the book is the St. Michael All Colour Cookery Book. which is ironic because color seems very muted in all of the photos.
Like everything's got like a
sepia.
What's it called? Yeah,
a filter. It's like when you first got Instagram and you put loads of filters on.
Yes, you just need to get this book. This is the
original Instagram. It's a trip.
We've been talking about doing like a vintage, like old cookbook for ages, but we just haven't. Like, thanks to Simon for like kind of pushing us over the edge to choose one.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard, you know, because if you ask a lot of people, oh, what cookbook have you, you know, did your mom have, whatever, it's always like Delia.
Yes.
Comes up a lot here, at least.
I'm looking at my dog who's at the end of my bed munching something, and this happens about 3 times a day. I have no idea what he's munching. Guess that snack. Could be anything from my sock to
your bra.
Yeah, my bra. Bloody loves a bra. Anyway, sorry. Yes.
So yes, we're glad that we've got this one. And for those who don't know, aren't acquainted, St. Michael was the brand name of everything from Marks and Spencer, the supermarket,
yes,
for a long, long time. They only changed to be called Marks and Spencer. Like, they've always been called Marks and Spencer, but all of their branded goods, like their own brand goods, were called St. Michael something. So there's a lot of these St. Michael cookbooks out in the world, and they are M&S cookbooks.
Yes. Well, I wonder why Marks and Spencer chose St. Michael above all people.
Yeah, what's his do you know much about St. Michael?
Well, I'm just looking him up right now. They decided to drop St. Michael in 2000 as the brand, as it endeavored to turn around its fortunes at the time following a profit plunge. So I guess religion wasn't doing it for them. But apparently he's considered a champion of justice, a healer of the sick, the guardian of the church, and a major proponent of the beige food photo.
Got
you. There you go. Yeah, that's why.
So he's perfect for that, isn't he? Is Michael your confirmation name?
No, but it should have been.
Look at that little Catholic banter there for you. Cheeky little bit of a...
Then there's no greater banter.
Banter.
Don't you love him? There's a section in this called Foreign Soups.
Yes, that was what got me. That's the page that Hannah sent to me, and she was like, this book's amazing. And I was like, hey, I'm buying Foreign Soups.
And the borscht, they've got borscht in here, and honestly the photo looks like something from a scientific experiment, or maybe like The Last of Us.
Can I just say that you know, for all we're going about to say about this book,
may St. Michael please forgive us.
Yes, may St. Michael and all of his mates please forgive us. But there is so many recipes in here.
Huge amount of recipes.
I don't know how they do it. Like, there's like, it's like 4 per page. And it's amazing because, well, they pretty much all just like dump everything in a fucking bowl and then get on with it. Put it in the oven for 6 hours. But, all of the recipes have everything in metric and imperial measurements.
Yes, I really
as well
rate
as the
that.
Recipe.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Whilst we have a break for Hannah's dog to stop barking, I will tell you all that this book, the St. Michael All Colour Cookery Book, came out first in 1976 in hardback. 1976. What were you doing in 1976, huh?
I was being cooked up in my mother's belly.
And the version I've got came out in 1980, and that's the paperback version. And it's interesting. Like, I like the notes at the beginning. Like, one of them says, use the metric or imperial measurements because they're not interchangeable. You have to use one or the other.
Oh, right. That's good.
Because they've been tested, you know, on their own, because, you know, they're different. And there is some funny, like, I don't know if you read any of the introduction stuff. I didn't read it all.
You're better at doing that than me. I'll leave that up
convenience in the kitchen. I just liked this. Oh, convenience foods and the store cupboard. And I don't really know what they mean by convenience foods. I don't think they mean like dried foods.
Right.
But I just love this sentence. Obviously, for the happy owners of freezers, life is much simpler. Yes, My life is so much, I mean, obviously, this was before everybody had a freezer.
In this copy, which is Simon's, it's got this like convenience in the kitchen bit, which is listing all the equipment that you should have in your kitchen. And there's little ticks beside each of the bits of equipment that they have.
Oh my God, that is so cute.
Yeah, they did not have the Dario Castle pudding molds, which I think is frankly huge fucking mistake.
But anyway. I mean, I don't know how you've cooked anything from this book if you haven't got the Daryl pudding molds.
They did have a mooly grater though, guys. It's okay.
Wow.
No potato masher.
I had a quick look through this and, you know, I have most of it. I don't have a marble slab for cutting bread, unfortunately, or a cherry pitter.
What?
I don't have a food mill. That gives me PTSD for a good old the French laundry. That he absolutely loved a French mill.
Food mill? I would also, what the hell is a food mill?
It's not just like a thing for... Hannah is gay. Death by dog licks right now.
Bad name of the week.
You must have two wooden spatulas, one for sweet and one for savoury.
Oh, yes.
Do not mix them up, Hannah. Told you before.
It's like one for like onions and one for not onions. That would be more.
And then
reasonable.
Four wooden spoons, two small and two large, one set for sweet and one for savoury.
You do get the sense that a lot of work has gone into this book.
Oh, 1,000%.
It's like a housewife's, you know, classic housewife of the bygone era. Yeah.
Where do you get your trussing needle and strings from?
Interestingly, I've got a guy.
Oh, you have a truss guy.
Liz Truss's husband. He doesn't get as much of the spotlight, but damn, he knows how to make a needle.
I will just read the contents out to let people know the kind of thing that we're looking at in this book. So convenience in the kitchen, we've talked about, and then it's very to the point.
Yeah.
Soups, starters, fish, meat, poultry and game, vegetables and salads, snacks and suppers, which that's completely separate and has a lot of meat and vegetables in it. Desserts and puddings, bread, scones, cakes and biscuits, and then that's it.
Index. Molly Baz could never. She would die a death at this straightforward table of contents. What?
She could never.
Don't you mean snackizzles and supper dumpers?
Don't hate the play, I hate the game and poultry.
Yes.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And yeah, the photography is absolutely incredible.
Oh, just beyond. It's almost like it's tried to be like styled. You know, there's like casual little oil pourers beside a bowl of something, or yeah, like some torn up baguette beside the foreign soup.
Yeah.
But we're not buying any of it, M&S.
Lemon wedges. And every single photo is in a different dish. No dish is repeated, as in like the plate in which it is served on.
No.
Nothing is repeated.
Have you seen the avocado with prawns on page 38? Looks like a brain. It's like the avocado pit has been taken out and filled with a prawn cocktail.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I've seen that. Lovely.
Lovely.
And those dishes, that they are specific, they must be specific avocado dishes. Look at the size and shape of them. They're like little glass ramekins that are perfectly avocado shaped.
That's quite cute.
M&S, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, was this like, were they using it as a bit of an advertising kind of catalogue?
I don't know. I didn't notice anything, you know, this, well, unless it was in like the acknowledgements, like, thanks to M&S for the homeware, but that must be
hashtag
every piece of homeware they've ever hashtag ad. Thanks to M&S for gifting me these butter dish, this pate dish.
This avocado dish that could also be like a surgical dish. Your favorite photo is on page 73, right? The steak and kidney pudding, which looks like...
Don't. This was part of the reason we couldn't record the other day, because the photo of the steak and kidney pudding is honestly one of the most repulsive things I've ever seen, because it's a proper like suet pastry,
but it looks like a meringue or something.
Oh, it looks like it's not been cooked. It looks, whatever it is, it's not been cooked.
It's anemic.
And oh, it's awful. I mean, even this in the back of this, there's a bottle of Lee and Perrins branded, which, you know, Molly Bass could never. And then this scale, like you know, like a dial scale, and even the scale looks sad. We'll put a photo on Insta, but like the scale looks like a sad little bear.
It really does. But what's funny is like the top of the pastry has been cut away to reveal the steak and kidney that lies within. And it's just like a little peek, like a little tease, like someone lifting up their like night dress to show a little bit of leg. But it all just looks so repulsive.
Oh, it's so bad.
It's very meat heavy. It's very meat heavy.
Yes, this whole book.
American style hamburgers.
You didn't know about hamburgers before this?
No, have you seen?
I mean, there is a lot of, you know, foreign inspired food.
There's bangers with lentils on page 146 that the bangers in question are frankfurters.
Yeah, proper, like, you know, like they look like they've been done from a cartoon.
Yes, on a bed of lentils with a lovely, you know, there's a styling in the background of a, you know, a lovely little frothy glass of beer and some French moutarde to smother on your fucking frankfurters and lentils. It looks horrendous. But it's protein packed.
There's a whole awful section, isn't there?
Yeah.
Did you check out that bit?
Yeah, it was awfully scarred.
It's a wheat bread.
But, you know, you said that you like anchovies, or you're going through an anchovy phase. And actually, I came through earlier. Came through? Choo-choo! I came across earlier this anchoyage spread thing.
Yes! I honestly, that was on my list. The corner is folded down for that.
Oh, of the highest praise. You toast some bread, you pound some anchovies with garlic.
I can only pound anchovies.
You're filthy, that's my problem. Mind. With garlic. So you just make like a paste and spread it on toast. I quite like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, and then the you bake it. Weird.
Doesn't look like toast to me. It looks like fucking Rivita.
It looks like Rivita on toast.
Like someone's regurgitated, right?
Why are you baking this? Right. I don't understand. There's nothing to be gained from baking it.
Look, these people had to have their ovens on. It was they didn't have central heating.
They weren't lucky enough to have a freezer.
Yeah. They're like, look, we've got to keep warm. You know, it's cold all the time.
These vol-au-vents won't cook themselves, guys. It is a joy.
Did you think about making the jugged hare?
I did, yes.
Some lovely... I particularly like the picture next to the jugged hare, which is a roast pheasant, where they've served it on a silver platter, obviously.
Of course.
And with like a decanter of like cognac or something in the back. There's two pheasants on the platter, and each one of them has two feathers that they've stuck in the in their butts after cooking, just to show.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, just be reminded of their heritage, I guess, their previous life. Most random photo styling award has to go for the tomato chowder, which is, you know, it's a little tureen of tomato chowder with some cheese on top. Lovely.
Mm.
Lid off and propped against the tureen at a jaunty angle, but for some reason there's a like piece of paper in the background that's like a $500 reward for the arrest and conviction of Jesse. I'm assuming it's like a cowboy reward yes, photo I've seen thing. That. There's no
I guess
that's reference.
Sure that it's American.
Is it American? Who do we know?
I don't know. Chowder, I suppose, is.
Chowder. I cannot hear the word chowder without saying it. You know that episode of The Simpsons? Is it The Simpsons?
No.
Chowder. They have to say it in a Boston accent. Chowder.
Chowder.
Well, I will. Well,
what about this whole tongue?
Victoria's not sticking her own tongue out at this point, just for everyone to know. There's a horrendous photo of a pressed tongue.
Pressed tongue.
It's a real journey.
I guess you cook it from you don't cook it in the oven. You put it in a pan and simmer for 4 to 5 hours until the tongue is very tender.
Oh, it's great for those hot days you don't want to have the oven on, actually.
Oh.
But now, Simon's going to kill us because I think he did think that this book had value. And I think that value lay in some of the like pages where it tells you how to prepare like any vegetable or any meat. So there's like a vegetable and salad section and it's like A to Z of vegetables. And then it's like preparation, like what you need to like clean or what you need to cut off. And then it's like how to boil it, how to fry it, how to bake or roast it, and then a serving suggestion, which is nice. It's a nice touch.
Yes, I agree. What annoyed me slightly about the difference in the vegetable, right? So the meat section of that is there's a whole set, you know, a section of meat that says how to suck dog.
That was dog yawning.
Yes, so in the fish section,
yes,
where it says how to cook all the different fishes, there is a season for them, but not in the vegetable section.
Oh, how strange.
Isn't that weird? Like, firstly, I didn't know fish had seasons, but I guess it makes sense, like lamb or whatever.
Yeah,
but vegetables are the most seasonal of all the vegetables.
This is true.
Of all the foods. So that's points off for me.
Yeah, that is weird.
But no, I did really like that, actually.
Isn't there something about oysters that you don't eat them on a month that has an R in it or something like that?
No, you don't. You only eat them on months with R's in them, isn't
right,
it?
Right. Yeah, gotcha. I don't know.
Because in summer, they're not good.
Okay, I see.
So like May, June, August, May, June. July, August.
Oh.
Don't have ours in, but the rest do.
Well, I should tell this woman that walked past me on the street the other day by my house. She looked really happy with herself and she was just walking along with two little boxes in her hands and each of the boxes had a little oyster in and she was just walking along really happy. Oh. I think she was bringing them home. But now I know. July.
Oh, but I think maybe. So I just Googled it. Foodie tradition. Dictate only eating wild oysters in months with the letter R, so from September to April, to avoid watery shellfish or worse, a nasty bout of food poisoning.
Worse, watery shellfish.
Now, a new study suggests people have been following this practice for at least 4,000 years.
Yeah.
But I guess if your oysters are like farmed, which I guess no oysters are farmed because why would you bother? They're like fucking bottom feeders. I love oysters, just to say. But they're abundant, aren't they?
Yeah. Anyway, that was the only seasonal fish I could think of.
Anyway, so that annoyed. But I do like that thing about how to cook, particularly with the meats.
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 Meats, fishes.
Meat cute.
Breads. So, my friend, what did you know, I can sense your enthusiasm. Did you go for the Scotch woodcock?
Not sunny weekends.
The turkey croquettes.
I liked the look of the turkey croquettes, but I don't often have leftover turkey, which is what you needed for them.
Chinese liver with tagliatelle.
Oh,
chapped liver.
Chapped liver. I did not go anywhere near the offal section. Also, this book predicted veal to have a greater pronouncement, that's not the word, prominence in our lives than does, because there is like 4 or 5 pages on veal and I could not tell you where to get veal. Also, you know, I don't agree with it generally as a practice. So, yes.
Why do people dislike veal more than they like lamb? as a like ethical thing?
Because I think veal, I think there's an active, you keep the there's a way in which you keep the cow small.
Oh.
By, I believe, keeping it in some kind of contained
space.
So there's a, you're playing a part in that, whereas like lamb,
they're frolicking.
They're frolicking and they're just killed.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry to put it down. I believe. I think it's important that we have issues.
No.
We should have a side podcast where I'm the vegetarian and I ask you meat questions. We'll call it meat cute.
Meat cute. Yes. I love that. I did listen to an interesting podcast from the food program, the BBC food program, this week, where they talk about, or maybe it's about wild venison.
Oh.
And talking about how it's the most, it's the only ethical meat because there's too many deer.
Oh.
And that we need to cull them in some way. And so.
We should eat venison.
You know, there's a lot of these restaurants and they were even talking to like schools and stuff in like the north of England and Scotland.
Wow.
Who serve and eat all this wild venison because it's abundant and available and like local.
Yeah.
That's and ethical to eat because, you know, sometimes it's not even killing them. It's just, it's like roadkill or whatever.
They were right. Talking about.
So. I thought that was really interesting. And this one, anyway, we need to talk about the ethics of, we'll leave that for the side pod.
Yeah.
Meat cute.
Well, I mean, there's just a thing that people don't like to eat cute animals, right? That's the thing as well. So that's the anti-deer, yeah, like anti-rabbit. Horse. Yeah.
Yeah, like horse is a big. What did you just
call me?
Your mom's a horse.
anyway, sorry, what did you cook?
I did not cook veal. Okay, so I cooked two things. Well, I made two things. And the second thing is kind of a cheat. It's only really half.
Okay.
Because I just couldn't find the inspiration in this one. Guys, I couldn't. Like, I had lots of, like, maybes. And I did, there's, you know, shout out to the kedgeree.
Oh, yeah.
Which I really like, which is, like, smoked haddock in, like, a rice thing with eggs.
Yeah.
That's often served as like a breakfast food. I love that shit, but I didn't make that. I made the sag gosht.
Oh my God, I didn't even see this.
It's a curry.
Oh.
Obviously, you know, I was like,
in the most authentic sense, I'm sure.
So, sag meaning spinach.
Yep.
And I'm guessing gosht means beef. So it's a beef curry.
Oh, right.
And the description of it is, this dry beef and spinach curry is fairly mild, though spicy.
Dry beef?
Dry beef. Dry beef and spinach. So it's not like a, Indian curries are mild. It is in the blend of spices that the true flavour is achieved. Hot curries are made simply by increasing the amount of chilies or chili powder used.
Oh, education.
So it is, yes. Thank you, St. Michael, for teaching me about Indian food. So this was a fascinating eat. Really, really interesting. So it's onions, garlic, ginger, turmeric, chili powder, coriander seeds, ground coriander seed, mustard seeds, chuck steak, a kilogram of chuck steak, which is like, I googled it and tried to look it up. It's like, I basically use like stewing steak,
beef,
like,
or the whatever. Best,
yeah, stewing beef that I could find, frozen whole leaf spinach, which you have to thaw and then dry by heating gently in a saucepan over low heat. Wow. And I don't know if you noticed that they do this a lot in this. For this, you need two 141 gram cartons of natural unsweetened yogurt. So they're like telling you what to buy in how it was packaged.
Yeah. They do that. That's right.
Like cartons of yogurt. And it's like with the frozen, the frozen spinach, they want a 1 226-gram packet of frozen whole leaf spinach.
Presumably all of this is like widely available in Marks and Spencer's as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. You can imagine the little cartons of yogurt. So you basically, you just make it like a casserole.
Oh.
So you kind of, you put butter and oil into a flame-proof casserole.
Woo!
We're back with the flame-proof casseroles. And then you add the onion, garlic, and the, all those spices and, you know, fry it off for like 5 minutes. And then you add the meat and brown that.
Okay.
And then you add the spinach because you've thawed it, right? So there's, you don't need to add any water. So it's already thawed. And then add in 1 carton of the yogurt.
Okay.
Right? Ooh. So you've got like browned meat. Yeah.
That yogurt.
And then you...
Gonna go. Funny.
Then you put it in the oven for 2 hours.
Oh, Jesus. No energy crisis in the 70s, apparently.
It's only 160, so it's like a warm oven, they call it, until the meat is tender. So 2 to 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You see, like, my oven's fairly powerful. So it was done. And it says if the curry becomes too dry, add a little water and then stir in the other carton of yogurt when you're ready to serve it.
Oh, God.
So it's got like that like creaminess. And it was fun. Like, it was nice. Like, I didn't hate it.
Okay.
And it says to serve with plain boiled rice.
Love it.
And parathas, which is such an interesting like sentence for a book like that. Like parathas. which I did serve it with parathas because I always have them in my freezer because frozen parathas are delicious and take like 5 minutes to cook, and rice. But yeah, it was that's a lot, a kilogram of beef to like what is essentially a quite small amount of spices. So 1 garlic clove,
Jesus.
2 onions, 1 small piece of ginger, a teaspoon of turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon of chili powder, 1 tablespoon of coriander. That's not a lot of flavor.
No.
To go in with all that meat and onions.
Did the meat go tender, or was it?
It did. It cooked exactly like a casserole. I think that was my main thing that didn't compute in my brain. It's like when you're eating it tasted like you're eating like a beef bourguignon. Like the meat tasted like, you don't get beef like that with curry generally because Indian food doesn't really come with beef that often.
Yeah.
Because it's only beef. And so that, like, in my head, it tasted like I was eating a beef casserole.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had those like very, very faint like curry flavors, and then like yogurt on top. So it's very, it felt very strange.
Yeah.
But I didn't, it wasn't the worst meal I've ever eaten.
Oh, great. High praise.
Yes. But I just think beef, that kind of beef in a curry like that was not, it's not for me.
No.
I think I was actually saved a little bit because I didn't have quite enough spinach. I didn't have 226 grams of spinach.
What?
So I went next door and asked for a cup of spinach to my, well, I was talking to my neighbours, not Nick and Jamie, who I always talk about, but the other side, whose names are Kate and Ewan, and we were outside watering our plants. And I was like, you don't have any frozen spinach, do you? And Kate was like, I don't, but I have some kale.
And
I was like, fine, kale will do, like a little bit of kale. And she gave it to me and she was like, it does have a bit of sugar on it because I make, you know, like sea, like crispy seaweed.
Oh, yeah, okay.
With it. And I was like, great. So I feel like that little bit of sugar in the kale really did add to it. Like, you could kind of taste that sweetness in there.
You just needed some extra flavor.
Yeah, right. I did get a lot of, like, you know, lime pickle, you know, various pickles and stuff. So to go along with that, I made the cucumber writer.
Oh, nice.
Writer. That is in the, like, you know, so it wasn't, you know, I'm sorry. I kind of feel like I've let the side down, but nothing really brought me to life in this one. And that is on, let me find it, page something. There is a whole mayonnaise section, which I love.
Yeah.
I have lots of nice memories of making, like coleslaw from scratch with my mom from probably a book like this,
yeah, right?
Like, and you're making the mayonnaise and stuff, which is, it's so cool to make your own mayonnaise. But had a few cucumbers from my odd box. I was like, let's try this, and this was actually really good.
Oh, was it?
And I love this kind of stuff. Yeah. And it was perfect for that meal. So you
want to numb the spiciness of your beef.
Yeah, exactly. I needed it. So it's a large cucumber which you have to peel, half, seed, and then slice into small strips, which is a lot of work for a cucumber. But you get it. And then you basically put that in a sieve with a teaspoon of salt and a teaspoon of sugar. And let it kind of sit.
Yeah.
So it kind of draws out some of the moisture. And then, again, you're back to 2 cartons of natural yogurt.
Oh, wow.
And basically you just add the cucumber, the salted cucumber in with the yogurt and then some mint. 15 mils, 2 tablespoons of chopped mint and black pepper. And then you top it with a bit of olive oil and some more mint.
Right.
So honestly, I'm sorry. I fucking phoned this one in.
No.
It was nice.
Oh, that's
It was really good.
Good.
Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. And frankly, I'd make that again. I liked that you would, you put sugar on it as well as salt to draw the moisture out. That was fun. And then I've got... So I've created this little herb garden. This is a story for another time in my front garden. And the mint I've got is called pineapple mint.
Ooh.
And it literally smells and tastes like pineapple. And so I put that in there. And so that was it felt like a fun little extra something.
Oh, nice.
Extra kind of sweetness.
Do you feel like that might be your go-to raita recipe now?
Yeah, I felt like it would be.
That's nice.
It was easy and it. Everyone likes it, right?
Yeah. It's great.
I always get a bit, but like these days you don't often get it from the Indian takeaway,
No.
I used to love getting it in your little poppadom. Anyway,
dips.
That's what I made. They were my, had some other options, but we can talk about that after. But yeah, what did you make?
Well, I equally kind of struggled with what the hell am I going to make?
Yeah, definitely.
Here?
I understand why you struggle because, I feel like even some of the veggie dishes have suet and lard in them.
Yeah, totally. But I thought the baking section was quite fun. There was girdle scones and stuff that I thought looked fun. I didn't make them, but they looked really cute.
Girdle. You don't have a girdle?
Gurgle. I made the date and walnut loaf from here.
Ooh.
And that was because I had a lot of walnuts in the cupboard. I don't know why. I can't remember what I bought them for. And I just basically had everything. I just had to get some dates. So, you know what I'm saying? Am I right, girls? Gotta get those dates.
Went on hinge.
And it's very simple. You... Put dates, bicarb of soda and salt in a bowl and you pour over hot water and you set that aside to cool. I don't know
and what
why.
Does that do?
I don't know why.
It doesn't do a lot of explaining.
There's nobody here to ask the questions to.
Is it plump up your dates?
plump up your dates.
I get that a lot.
All the colours of the world, plump up your dates.
Plump up your dates.
Every boy and every girl, plump up your dates.
Wallets on the left.
Wallets on the left if you're having a good time. Dates on the right if you know that it feels good. Spice up your loaf.
Spice up your love. I mean, that is a great name for a cookbook. You can have that one for free, somebody.
Well, there's no spice in here, let's be real. But then you sift flour into a mixing bowl, add butter and rub that into the flour, which is interesting. That's interesting for a loaf. Normally you only do that for scones or something.
Yeah.
And then you stir the walnuts and sugar into that. And then you mix the dry ingredients into the cooled date mixture. So that's your dates, bicarb, salt and hot water. And then you beat in
the
egg.
Oh, the hot water stays?
Yeah, it stays. It's all datey.
Oh, so it's kind of you're making a date syrup?
Yeah, I guess, kind of. Oh, adding me up.
Did you make a date syrup last night? I went home alone.
And that you beat in an egg to all the at the end, just to the everything. And then you put it in a loaf tin. But to be fair, it turned out lovely. It was a really nice, like, lovely. It was really lovely.
Like, neither of us have the accent for that, but I'm sure in some English accents it works.
One sec. Doug's been an absolute terror today.
I can hear him. It sounds like he's pouring himself a gin and tonic. He's like, it's Sunday night. I've had a tough one. Yeah, it sounds like clinking glasses. He's obviously upset that he's not getting any attention.
Anyway, sorry, the loaf was great. And I did give it away. I give it to the lovely people who mind Doug, who get a lot of the food from the podcast. Mm. But I did have a little slice and it was really nice. They say to like spread it with butter.
Yeah, it sounds like a malt loafy
exactly
kind of vibe. Yeah. Afternoon snack.
Afternoon, you cannot eat it any other time of day. Afternoon, but there was loads of, you know, it's those things sometimes there's not enough of the dates or walnuts or whatever, but it was just like a really nice proportion and the texture was really nice considering the method.
Did you chop the dates? Were the dates chopped?
Sorry, I did chop the dates, yes. Right. They were stoned and maybe chopped that, before they went into their little bicarb bath.
That was like a torture method.
I think the bicarb is maybe to soften them too or something, you know? Soften those dates. Yeah. So that was good. And then...
good one to make for anybody that you know who's having a baby, right? Because dates... they say to eat dates towards the end of your pregnancy to prep you for childbirth.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, people did it. I didn't.
And Marcus turned out just fine.
Just fine. But yeah, something, but you know, a lot of my friends who've had babies did.
Oh, that's interesting. Eat them.
And I mean, I had a baby near Christmas. And so there was a lot of date.
Date relate. Related
paraffin, you know, there was chocolate covered dates and stuff like that. Was a dream, but probably anyway, but this could be good for that.
Interesting.
Anyway,
yeah, good. We'll do a pregnant
sorry about
specific.
That shit chat. So,
and then the other thing I made was the tomato and Gruyere casserole.
Oh,
now casserole.
Hannah is not. She's an interesting look on her face.
Casserole, I feel, is a funny term to use here. But no, this is fine. And it does actually, as I was making it, I was like, this reminds me of something. And it was the dish I made for, I think, Simon Hopkinson, like the tomatoes and cream.
Yeah.
Which at the time was, and still is, like, reminds me of a dish that my mum used to make. So it was like, it was quite nice. But this one, they say it's best made during the summer months when tomatoes are both plentiful and flavoursome. They're the original tomato honeys. Long before we came along,
they walked so we could run.
So it's
in tomatoes,
runny tomatoes. It's tomatoes, single cream, Gruyere cheese. Now, little disclaimer, I didn't use Gruyere because Gruyere was like £4 for a pack and Emmental was like £2.50. So I got Emmental because slightly similar vibe, and Gruyere is just expensive. Some parmesan, salt and pepper, chopped basil, caster sugar and butter. So it's very, very simple. But your tomatoes have to be skinned and sliced. So it doesn't tell you how to skin.
Oh, my God. They love that in here.
Do they? I didn't notice it elsewhere.
Yeah, because I almost... A possibility for me was the aubergine and tomato casserole.
Oh, yeah.
Again, more like a gratin, right?
Yeah.
And that was the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have the patience or energy or time for that.
Yeah, I was kind of like, how do I do this again? I kind of winged it, but it was fine. It worked out. But then it's very simple. So you literally just layer everything up. So it's like oven-proof casserole dish, not fireproof, sadly. But you put the tomatoes in first. Then you pour over some cream, sprinkle with the little of the two cheeses, season with salt and pepper, strange order, and sprinkle with a little basil and sugar. And then you just keep going. So then more tomatoes, and then you dot the top of the dish with pieces of butter and bake in a moderate oven, not a warm oven like you were fiddling around with, for 20 minutes or until the casserole is bubbling.
Oh.
And
how was it?
It was fine. I definitely kind of just like didn't really obey the measurements because it felt like it should just be intuitive, right? Like a little bit of cream on top, a little bit of cheese. It was a little bit watery, like it was a lot of liquid at the end, even though I left it in the oven longer than I needed to, or it said to. So like, yeah, trying to serve it up was, yeah, like kind of almost trying to set, you know, when you're trying to drain it at the same time to leave some of the juices in the pan.
Sported spoon.
Yeah, exactly. But it was tasty. And the cheese on top, the cheesy bit on top, because that's, you're meant to finish with cheese on top, was really nice. And I just had it with some like salad and some crusty bread. It was fine. I feel like it's something you could make if you just have all that shit around, right? Like a quick lunch bit. But you don't even need a recipe.
It's in the suppers section, right? Snacks and suppers.
Yes, I think so.
I believe. Maybe it's in the vegetable section, which would make sense because it's vegetables.
After the Chinese style cabbage or the beetroot and sour cream.
Oh, yeah, no, it's in vegetables.
So, yeah, it was fine. I feel like, yeah, like you can imagine being like, I don't know, a mum or like classic like housewife in the 70s and being like, oh, Chinese style cabbage. That sounds exotic.
Exactly.
Foreign soups.
And some of this stuff is like definitely before its time. Like there's a shish kebab section that there's a recipe for shish kebabs that looks nice. Like, you know, there's just like delicious looking chicken on a stick, and who doesn't want that?
Yeah. Nutty orange salad.
Also, I feel yeah, there's a lot of that, and I can't get on board with it. But I feel like when I was looking through this to make, you know, some observations and notes before we recorded, I saw that there's this oven-baked chicken recipe that you bake with crisps on it.
No.
And I didn't see it, and I would have done that. And then also, I love it. They say you need plain crisps. You just don't get that anymore. That means just like salted crisps for those that, you know, don't know, but that's what we used to call them. I feel like that's what they used to be labeled as, right?
Plain crisps.
And I guess it's a bit like cornflake chicken. And, you know, I don't do enough cooking with crisps.
None of us do, I think.
No. Yeah, I do wonder if in like 25, 30 years' time, we will look back at Molly Bars and be like, ha ha ha, this is like funny. Like in the same way as we're looking at this now and being like, wow, oh, it was of its time. Frankly, probably because there'll be no animals left to eat in 25 years time.
To be covered on our side podcast, Meet Cute. Tune in next week.
Meet Cute.
Was there anything you wanted to make apart from the crispy crisp chicken?
No, the brownies looked quite fun.
Yeah,
you know,
I
like
they were good.
They're not in any way like a brownie that you'd imagine, but like, oh, these are very popular in America. And
have you heard of them?
That kind of stuff. Also, there's a lot in the baking section. There's a lot of like traditional stuff. There's a hot cross bun recipe, and loads of Christmas stuff. So if I needed to make like a fruit cake for Christmas or something, a book like this is absolutely where I'm going.
I completely agree. There was like a caramel square star recipe and things like that that I think would be really good. And those, what did I talk about, that baking recipe that looked good? Oh, yeah, those girdle scones or whatever.
Girdle scones.
Yeah. I was quite intrigued by the chilled avocado soup. You know, it's apparently a boon to busy cooks on hot summer days. And we've just been talking. We've done full circle here. I just think that sounds intriguing. Yes. It's like avocados, lemon juice, celery, tomato puree. Wait, 3 141 cartons of natural yogurt, chicken stock, dash of Tabasco sauce, and snip chives. Yes. You know how chicken stock and avocado go really well together. Come on. Come on. Come on, Victoria. Are you even a food podcaster? Jesus.
If you want to make that for me next time I see you. Is that in the food thesaurus?
This is in the iced soups section, just so you know. That's definitely the most left field one, but there is a cucumber soup, a vichyssoise, and what a fun word to say. Vichyssoise.
Vichyssoise.
You want to come over? Have some date syrup and vicious bars and chill. Swaz and chill is the hat, is the baseball hat that you need. Basketball hat.
Basketball hat.
Basketball hat.
You said it right the first time.
I don't know what's wrong with me. It's a baseball hat. Anyway, we said we were
context for that, sweet listener, is yes. That oh, I just
no, go.
That's the baseball hat that we need. I am looking for, I am in the market for a baseball hat with something very fun. It's some kind of funny slogan on it.
And there has never been a more considered purchase, but this is taking.
Honestly, I've been talking about it for months. And, you know, yeah, Hannah wanted me to get one that said, ask me about my childhood trauma. And then also, but for a lighter one, we also were going to get one that said crudités all day. I think it's quite funny. But now, vicious was and chill.
There you go.
It's a winner. One.
Yes, we thought about rating this, but we thought, you know, it's never right when you rate one of these older books, is it? You just end up being a bit cruel about it. And that's not fair because that's, you know, it was a different time, as we've said.
No, it's not fair.
Were we to rate, we would rate out of unique serving dishes because it is... Yes.
Everyone's different.
Not the same bowl has been used twice in here. And there are a lot of bowls.
Big you bowl think there's food. Literally four recipes a page.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all of them have pictures. So that's a lot of bowls.
Yeah, you would be, yeah, surely you would rate it well for the photo, you know, for having lots of photos. You like photos. Don't you? Don't you like
I
photos?
I do like photos. Yeah. I swear I like them. Yeah, the one at the beginning, the one on the front page is spectacular, isn't it? It's got a bottle of 1972, I'm going to say that is Beaujolais.
Beaujolais all day is the other hat that you were looking at. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I do love a Beaujolais. If anybody's thinking about buying me a bottle of wine, love those fresh and bright light reds. And it's got, yeah, so it's, and it's got these like, what is it, like oranges in like a caramel sauce, right? Yeah. That I saw.
Demented.
I don't know how you would eat that. No. It's just like a whole, it's like a Terry's chocolate orange, but an actual orange.
There's one random little cup of prawn cocktail. There's enough oranges to feed like a small army, but there's like just one little prawn cocktail for presumably the favorite.
Yeah. And then like a roast beef with rosemary, and then which is served with courgettes and carrots. That classic thing you serve with roast beef.
I think it's lamb. Is it lamb? I don't know. I'll ask you. I'll
well, maybe it's
cute,
but either, either, yes, you're right. That is lamb. But courgettes. Also, I did notice, because we're in courgette season, in their courgette, how to cook courgettes, they suggest frying courgettes for 15 minutes.
Wow. Now, I'm actually
if you want
gonna...
courgette crisp, lads.
I will actually defend St. Michael here, the archangel of Marks and Spencer. I sometimes fry courgettes, mm-hmm. and I would keep them on a low heat for a while so that they get nice and soft. And then I turn up the heat to get the brownness on the outside. And it might not be, might just be slightly shy of 15 minutes. It depends on the size of your chunks.
I mean, doesn't it always?
This is what my mother always told me growing up. It always comes down to the size
it's not
of your
the size
chunks.
Of the boat. It's the size of your chunks.
Oh my god!
On that note,
yeah. We're gonna.
But on that note, actually, this was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
And so, if you do have any vintage cookbooks that you think we should do, and are easy to get hold of, because that's the thing with these vintage cookbooks, they're quite difficult to get hold of, then please let us know and we will absolutely take them into consideration.
And take the piss out of them.
Yes.
Yeah, because this is probably like a very British one, but it would be really fun to hear like what the Aussies or the like the American ones kind of are. Because maybe like, I guess like Joy of Cooking was a big one for the US, right? Yes. But it would be really interesting to hear about other countries. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. We're not going to talk about what's up next because that's what we don't do this season. But
surprise!
It's a good one.
It is a good one.
Also, thank you for bearing with us over the summer as we stretch a little longer between episodes. That's very kind.
Much like the evenings, we are stretching. Stretching out. Lazily stretching into the summer.
Yeah, that's it. And then boom! September will be here. We'll be back to school. It's an episode a week.
No, don't say that. One every 2 weeks. We've got to keep up meeky, remember?
We'll be back.
All right, we'll be back. Wait, we love you very much. Thank you for listening.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review as it helps others to find us and enjoy us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle, where you can also get in touch with us, let us know your thoughts, feedback, ideas for episodes, whatever you like. We really love to hear from all of you. So we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.